Hey everybody, a few quick things before we get to the episode. This is another of our Convergence recordings. There are, I think, like 7 things we've got left. It's got a little bit of background noise. I've gotten most of it out, but I hit that limit at which if I try to take more out, you end up with weird robot background noises, and that's just no good. So it's either a little bit of background noise or robot noises, and I figure the former's better. So it's got a little bit of that. It's not terrible. Like, our voices come in pretty clean, but I did want to let you know just in case you got to it and you were expecting the more crisp audio that some of our other episodes sometimes have. So other than that, the other thing that I will say before the year closes out that, well, we could really use some support from everybody. If you've got a little bit of time on your hands and you are a listener, if you have iTunes, do go leave a review of the show. I mean, we could really use as many as we've got. I think we've got 13 right now. But, you know, the more the merrier. There are a whole bunch of you guys. If you like us, you know, let people know. Go review it. You know, maybe tweet about us, whatever. But any of that kind of stuff will help, particularly on iTunes, because that's such a huge podcasting platform. And the more reviews they have, the more likely it is that we will appear higher in anything, really. We'll probably never appear on the like, front page thing because we don't have the numbers of the Nerdists, but, you know, the more the merrier. It does sort of help us, and we do want to reach more people because I think we're doing good stuff. The last thing, obviously, before the year closes out is that next year, 2015, we're doing the Women in SF theme. So there's going to be a lot of stuff to go over. It's going to be very similar to kind of the style of the World SF, which means a lot more focus on that particular thing. The World SF Tour is going to continue next year, although it'll take a side seat just because of the space and time. So other than that, I really hope you enjoy this episode, and thank you very much for listening, and, well, I'll see you in the next episode.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
But the Krell forgot one thing, it's monsters, John. Monsters from the id.
There you go again, always blaming me for everything.
Go switch off!
Exterminate! It's a trap!
This looks extraordinarily bad.
Commencing countdown. T minus 5, 4, 3. 2, 1.
All right, everyone. Looks like we are ready to get started. this welcome to Green is Not Diversity. Why is it always aliens versus the white guys? diversity is coming, but why is it taking so long? Why do some characters get rewritten to be Caucasian? And I'm sure there will be other questions that we will come up with. I think to start out, we will run down the table here so we can introduce ourselves.
Hi, I'm Sean Duke. I'm a member of the Skiffy Fanty Show, a Hugo-nominated podcast. That's all you want to know? Like, you want my full history?
I don't know. What do you want to talk about?
I like long walks on the beach.
Okay. Me too, man. Me too.
I know, they're really awesome,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Californians.
I know.
Hi, my name is Amy Kaczynski. I am an author of one book so far, an urban fantasy about the four horsemen of the apocalypse. And I'm here because I tried really hard, and, you know, with my first novel, so I may have tried too hard, but I tried really hard to be diverse in the characters that I was including, and I want to continue doing that as an author.
Dr. Rubidium, real name Rachel Burks. I'm a chemist and a huge sci-fi horror fan. I'm also part of what's called the Curly Hair Mafia. We are three women of color that review sci-fi and horror. We love the genre. Sometimes it doesn't love us back. So I'm just, you know, I always look out and see, okay, how is the genres of sci-fi, fantasy, and horror, how are they reflecting people of color? And so that's kind of what we talk about in Curly Hair Mafia.
My name is Benny. I write for QueerRica.com, where we write about issues related to science and skepticism, feminism, and the LGBT community.
Hi, my name is Laura Fats, and I am a literary agent with Red Circle Literary, and I'm also a book editor, and I specialize in science fiction and fantasy that is diverse.
All right. Well, to get things going, I'll just start posing questions to the panel here. What do you see as being the biggest diversity problem of today in science fiction, fantasy media? We'll throw the whole thing out there.
Oh, just starting left to right?
Yes.
Awesome.
You start.
I will start. I think that probably the biggest problem is just representation. Not necessarily how things are represented, although that is obviously important too, but just the fact that people of whatever group that are otherwise not represented, right, the fact that they need to be represented. And if they're not represented, then we're not even talking about them, and that's its own sort of problem. So I think that's probably the biggest issue.
Yeah. I think sometimes, especially with people of color, is you exchange one trope for another. So for a long time, the kind of stereotype was if you were black, you were going to die first or die very early. And now almost it seems to be kind of a trope of the what we would call the self-sacrificing Negro. And one example would be Idris Elba in Prometheus, which has many, many problems. But this idea that you make it, you've got a lot of screen time, and you make it all the way through to the end to kind of all of a sudden decide, well, I'm going to save everyone, which really doesn't even match your character, but you kind of... And if you realize in Prometheus, all the people of color end up being making that decision to sacrifice themselves on one ship. And you see the sidekick, the sassy sidekick, especially if you're a woman of color, before you get no screen time, now you're the BFF of the white, usually a white main character, and you're the sassy sidekick that, you know, or you're the sage. You see that a lot in Asian characters, Native American characters. One of the shows
I
love.
One trope I hear a lot about is the magical Negro.
Yes, the magical Negro. Anyone watch Sleepy Hollow? Love Sleepy Hollow. Really diverse cast. Great diversity. But even they fell for the mystic kind of all-inclusive Native American at some point.
Yeah. Vampire Diaries as well.
Yes. Yeah. So I would say that, you know, is that really a full-rounded character? Or are you just falling back into, yeah, you've got more screen time, but you're just falling into tropes and stereotypes. Is that better? Is that progression?
So I would say that the existence of the primary protagonist characters still being primarily white men is kind of the biggest problem. We're getting very good at having diverse backup casts, diverse secondary characters, but they still tend to be sidekicks or like the rest of the group, right? So I just saw the most recent X-Men movie, and Wolverine is very clearly the protagonist. There's a very diverse cast of really interesting characters, none of whom even get like a tiny fraction of the screen time that he has. So even when there's a diverse cast and lots of interesting stories to be told, the story that gets told is the story of the white guy.
I would say that my biggest issue with diversity in science fiction and fantasy has to do with how the reader is taught to read. So anybody, no matter how you learn to read, when you start reading fiction, you're taught to read as a cisgender, straight, white man. So anything else is not the default. And so, for instance, Harry Potter was never once said that Harry Potter was Caucasian. He has green eyes, which is not specific for Caucasian. He has black hair, which is, in Harry Potter world, associated with being white, even though that's not necessarily the case in real life. He has all of these features that don't necessarily need to be read as cisgender, straight, white male, yet no one questioned it, ever. And so that's a big problem that I'm seeing.
So why do you think this is taking so long? That it's taking so long to get diversity into fiction?
Start talking. I think part of it, I mean, there are lots of reasons, but one reason that I think I would just cite is I think there's a reluctance, particularly in Hollywood, to break what they consider to be the trend that works. And a good example of this, just as a way of, like, the idea that that women cannot be the headliners in an action movie. We know this has been thoroughly debunked because look at The Hunger Games. Those very obvious examples, and then we had Gravity, and I know there's some others that had
Kill
been
Bill.
Mentioned in a previous panel. I'm sorry?
Kill Bill.
Kill Bill. Oh, that's a good example, too. Yeah, yeah.
Alien, and that's 79.
Alien, all the way back, yeah. So we're seeing this repeatedly debunked, and yet, for some reason, we keep getting, like, dudes are the heroes all the time, and women are they're the secondary character to the guy. And I think that's just a reluctance. They have a model in place that seems to work. You know, it's like the Tom Cruise model. Like, he's the hero, the woman is the secondary character, right? Even in something like Edge of Tomorrow, he may start out as being kind of a doofus, because he is. In Edge of Tomorrow, he's not. He's basically knows nothing. But in the end, of course, he's going to redeem himself and will be the hero to some degree. And there's a reluctance because, of course, we're talking about money. And at the end of the day, that really is what's going to guide something like Hollywood. You know, it's... Sadly to put it, that they're businesses, and while they don't necessarily have a moral motive, they might. I mean, some individuals might, but the businesses themselves do not. They don't really care, and so it's a matter of sort of demonstrating that those models are not absolutes. Like, you can have a white dude be a hero, but then next time maybe you could have a black guy be a hero, or an Egyptian dude be a hero, or a woman be a hero, or whatever. Or maybe, like, the woman could save the guy for once, right? He needs saving. And in Edge of Tomorrow, some of that does happen. I mean, she basically has to retrain him. And that part of this, what is enjoyable about the movie, is just watching Tom Cruise die over and over and over again. But, yeah, so I think that's a good one possibility there. Yeah.
I would also say that a big part of it is that media is seen as representative. And fight words, but I might blame Tolkien for this, is that the idea, at least of fantasy, is that British medieval-based fantasy, and that's sort of the default. And so the thought is that if those are the characters, then the people that read fantasy and watch fantasy movies are white males. And so I know Neil Gaiman has, for years and years and years and years, people have been trying to make American Gods into a film or a miniseries. I hope it's finally happening, maybe. I don't really know. Who knows? But Neil Gaiman has been many, many times gotten into talks, very, very deep into talks, and the producers will say, well, of course, but we're going to make Shadow white. And Neil Gaiman's like, Shadow is the everyman. He's of no race, but he's most certainly not white. And Neil Gaiman, every single time, is asked, well, no, why does he need to be white? And the answer always is, well, black people don't read science fiction fantasy. They don't watch it.
Surprise!
Yeah, so the idea is that if media is representative, the people that are going to watch it are going to want to see themselves in the characters. And there's this idea that you're not going to see yourself in a character unless they're your color.
So one of the responses that I have to that, I totally agree, I think that's a big hurdle. So even if we did say that, even if we said, like, only if the character looks like you are they going to come see the movie, half of people are women.
That's true.
so there's that. There's a lot of people of color in this country, and more than there are white people in this world. The idea that the only people out there who are going to spend money on media is white dudes is just not accurate. If people feel that they're being represented, I do think that they're more likely to see media, but I also think that many white men are willing to go see movies and read books and watch television shows in which the primary character doesn't look like them, just like women and people of color have been doing for forever.
Media is not giving the audience enough credit.
Yeah.
I think it really depends on genre, right? We have a lot of examples where there are certain actors who would say that almost they transcend these pigeonholes, right? Mm-hmm. So you would say something like Denzel Washington. And I would even put Idris Elba in that camp because of the work on The Wire and Luther. But you're also underestimating the marketplace. So, you know, not making movies that have a predominantly, say, Latino, Asian or black cast, especially black cinema, if you're making the Madea movies, of which there are like a crazy number of them, And just not only that, but the, you know, all of Tyler, you know, of Perry's movies, of which there's several different characters, he's making, I think at one point it was 2 movies a year. And, I mean, and several sequels of these movies. And is it, I mean, yeah, they're not in the sci-fi kind of fantasy horror, but certainly that genre, if you moved that, it can't be just the dollar, oh, well, they're not seeing sci-fi. If you put Tyler Perry, say, in a sci-fi movie, or if you put Idris Elba in a sci-fi movie, or Denzel Washington, like Virtuosity, when Russell Crowe was nobody, that movie was made on the back of Denzel Washington, not Russell Crowe. So there are, you know, Will Smith, you know, for all the kind of hits and misses, the bankability of a person. I would even put Gina Torres in that category, especially on television. So I think, again, you are estimating, and you're also estimating the dollar to say that if it's true, the logic is people will see, they want to see stuff that looks like them, then you're not taking advantage of the marketplace by putting people of color in your movies, especially if the largest marketplace in the U.S. is Latino Hispanic dollars. That's the fastest growing segment of the population. And I can't think of a major character in a sci-fi fantasy or horror movie in the last year that has been intentionally... Anybody?
Latino character?
Anybody? Audience participation?
I'd love to be wrong about that, but I can't think of anything.
Yeah, I can't think of anything either. We had a couple of questions in the front row.
Just on the subject of why development in diversity in sci-fi takes so long. I think that there's the fact that the representation becomes a default and a norm, and that perpetuates itself and perpetuates the acceptance of the norm is a real big problem that people aren't taught. So they're just, you know, they kind of see these and then you assume that this is just how a story is, and then that we're not, when they become creators, they know you used to be a consumer and you're just taking this all in, and then you become a creator and it is stressed that you have, you know, that your point of view, that story is more than that, and that you should represent more than that. You know, even if you are a marginalized group, if you've just internalized all of this, you can still erase yourself because you're just so used to it. Like, as an artist and fat woman, there are not fat women in a lot of stuff.
No.
And a lot of fat artists are just so used to, like, drawing thin bodies that you just do it forever, and you just never think to even draw your own size, or, you know, you're just not used to see yourself. So just, I just believe the more I get into learning about diversity and how important representation is, the more I think that we have responsibility to tell creative people that you have responsibility becoming a creative person to get into learning about diversity and learning about more perspectives than just yourself and looking around you in reality and reflecting reality. You know, we have to stress that.
I think what you said, one thing you said is the, you know, kind of reminds me of a book I read back in college, The Bridge Called My Back, where this only works in this idea that you have creators and sci-fi authors that are people of color, that are LGBT community members. It only works to keep seeing the same, especially in comic books, you know, the really small waist, the huge breasts, yet tiny hips, spandex, and these kind of, you know, straight hair superhero heroines, and the kind of Uma Thurman Kill Bill, and I love that movie, but that only works. I mean, not all artists, not all creators, not all directors, not all writers are white men. So it only works. This keeps seeing the same images over and over again. It's like, it's just interchangeable, is that everyone's buying into it. And that's a hard, you know, it's a finger pointing back at, if you're a person of color, LGBT, and you're a creator, what are you putting out? Are you putting out the same tired view? And it only works is that if, you know, everyone buys into it, I think at some point, are you really striking out, and is, you know, but then is the market supporting that? I mean, I can kind of see if, you know, someone says that doesn't sell. I heard that especially from DC and Marvel. Oh, well, doesn't sell.
So, I'm sorry.
What's the market research on that? I don't.
I mean, one of the things that I get frustrated with as a consumer is that the creators oftentimes say, or the people who publish and sell the stuff that is created, it doesn't sell. I buy it if it was out there.
Right.
I mean, people love Aliens. People talk about it still. It's one of the best sci-fi horror films ever. Well, Aliens is horror, but Aliens is... One of the things that bothers me is when I do the work to find art that represents me as a queer woman, is it seems like the story, because there's not a lot of stuff on TV or movies. I love movies, but it's always just about the identity of the person. I mean, I can think of, and I can name some fantastic films that focus on race. I can think of and name some fantastic stories that focus on gender identity or queer culture. I can't think of many films or stories that just happen to feature people of diversity, because it doesn't need to be the focal point for it to be good.
Yeah, I mean, not everything needs to be 12 Years a Slave. What if, and great movie, but what if, you know, you recast, you know, Friends, right? Yeah. Like, I always joke, I'm like, wow, this movie is whiter than the cast of Friends. You have something set in New York, and you had these six people, and not one of them in New York. Mm-hmm. Not even a Puerto Rican. Like, that doesn't even, like, you, not just, just a friend, just a casual, not making it about that. Or
yeah, the closest they got was Joey, who was Italian-American. That was it.
That was their, yeah. So, I mean, how do you make it not about a movie or a comic book that... That it just so happens, especially I think, you know, LGBT is, that is not the central part, it's not everything they are. It's just, you happen to be the superhero is gay or bi or trans. I mean, that just, it just, like anything else, the super, Photon just happens to be a black woman, or Captain America happens to be, it's not, it's just, it's attribute. It's not made like, the whole center of their being.
Yeah, it's right. Sort of like he happens to have blonde hair, right?
But that's the, I mean, same, even thing with Noah, and I haven't seen this movie, but the director was like, well, yeah, we cast only white people, because that's basically, was like, that's the default.
Yeah.
So I want to go for a second after this idea of fat people, because I don't see myself represented on screen very much. I'm a fat guy. And, you know, there are no fat people in Star Trek, which is kind of my big fandom. And the idea here in these sort of utopian science fiction stories is that humans will have stopped being fat. That, in fact, ideal humanity does not contain fat people. I should be erased from the human race because of my fatness. That's a utopian society. That is messed up.
I think just a quick correction. The Star Trek films later on, they do get fat.
Okay, that's true. Yeah. Yes.
That's true.
Because they kept actors,
right,
whose bodies changed, not because somebody went like, well, maybe,
but not the new ones, not in the dark.
This isn't something that we should totally erase from humanity, right?
Right. Yeah.
And I mean,
the new ones,
right,
for sure, they're not.
They didn't like boot them when the old guys started getting some weight.
I think the explanation for that, well, not explanation, excuse for that, it was supposed to be a utopian society, and therefore we fixed everything, so no one would ever be that way again, which is, you know, really offensive.
Yeah.
And I have a hard time understanding how a fandom like Star Trek can erase most of its fans.
Yeah.
I would say that there's, the change is not going to come from the market. I mean, women are still having to publish books with initials so that they're not seen as a woman. Basically, we live in a time when media makers can interact with their audiences. They come to cons, they're on Twitter, they're on Facebook, they're on Reddit, they're everywhere, and they're visible. And so now you're coming out from just being a name in a movie and on a book to being visible. And so the next step from that is you need, you as an audience and us as consumers, we're all consumers, we need to create this content and need to put it forward. And we live in a wonderful time when there is, you know, hybrid authors, and there's, to bring in the most famous example, 50 Shades of Grey was self-published and now it became this huge phenomenon. And of course it's not science fiction fantasy, but it just shows that if enough people get behind an idea, there's a big change, and that has caused an entire shift in the marketplace. And now the norm is different. So it's really not going to come from the top, because what people are going to do in every sort of area of media is they're going to say, well, what we're doing is okay, we're making a lot of money. And none of us are happy with that. None of us are happy with, you know, if you're a woman, if you're queer, if you're fat, if you're trans, if you're whatever. Nobody's okay with that. And so we just need to show it.
There's a question over there.
It was already kind of brought up, with the whole, like, media, mainstream media, kind of making film ghettos with, like, if it's a movie with more than two black people,
it's a black movie.
Black. Yeah. Yeah. Or, like, women. It's about being a woman and women's issues. And so it's, like, it's kind of like the token films for those people, and then, like, all the other films with, you know, white guy protagonists being everything.
Right.
Yeah, it's this essentializing of difference rather than just sort of, like, if you took a statistical study, like, took 100 people, most likely you'd get, you know, a lot of white people, some people of various races, you probably get some gay people, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right, of various religions, et cetera. But, of course, what we see in movies are not reasonable statistical representations. It's like, you know, occasionally you get a black guy in space. And then, but then it's a big deal, and, you know,
and then he gets killed by the alien.
He usually gets killed by the alien, yeah.
But just imagine if they called Firefly a black television show.
It should have been a Chinese television show.
Yeah, but that's sure. To, you know, quite, you know, well, I mean, they're always working, actors. If you'd actually called it a black television show, I mean, yeah, it only lasted one season, but nobody ever refers to Firefly as a black television show. Why is that?
Out of curiosity, I wonder how Sleepy Hollow is being treated, considering that its primary cast is...
Yeah, and it got picked up on episode 2 for season 2.
Yeah, I mean,
and that is
successful.
Like mind-boggling for any television show.
And technically, its main cast is...
It's black. But it's not... Yeah. Nobody's calling it a black television show. Like, sometimes Scandal, which really only has now one main black character. Like, it's, I think because it's a sci-fi, and that myth that people think, oh, well, fantasy, science fiction, horror, black people, that's not their bag. But Sleepy Hollow, the audience is attracted. I mean, I'm watching the show just like I started watching Crossbones. Pirate is black. Oh, wait, the cast? Look at this cast. I'm more conscious of trying to support shows. And not only that, but there are certain, you know, as far as, you know, having characters that they're LGBT, and that's not the center of the show. It's not Queer as Folk. It's actually that this represents that you're going to have a friend in your group that this matches.
Right.
And seeing that come into the shows, and I will say that, you know, Asians on television, where are they? Because we killed the one off of Sleepy Hollow. Sorry about that.
One in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I forgot her name.
Oh, she's the one, though. Yeah. If I was Ming-Hwa, I mean, if I was any other Asian actress, I'd be like, damn it, she got that role again.
That's sort of the same thing in Elementary. But they do handle a lot more diversity. We were talking about that in the last panel, that... Benny? Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you. The one that you were in, where they feature characters that are diverse and treat them as human beings. Yes.
It's still Elementary, in particular, it's still fat. Like, I love Elementary. It's fat phobic.
It is.
I hate that part of it.
A lot of show. I mean, that's you know, the thing is, if you don't make it, if it's not written into the show like Mike and Molly, where they meet in an eating support group, and that's kind of the punchline and the running point of the whole show, trying to get that to just be, you just have various body sizes and shapes. I mean, even on Grey's Anatomy, which Shonda Rhimes does make shows with incredibly diverse casts, even Sarah Ramirez, I think she's one of Tony for Spamalot, she was considered the plus size actress.
Yeah. She's amazing.
They have to be good fatties too, right? They have to be trying this way. Like Mike and Molly meet in a reading support group because they're good fatties who are trying to not be fat anymore.
Right.
That's what makes them okay and like lovable characters.
And to expand that outside the SFF wing, the first episode of the recent season of Louie, there's a really wonderful scene, and if you haven't watched it, you should, even if you don't watch the show, where there's, you know, an awesome, awesome character that's introduced, but she's fat, and she is going after Louie, and she's hilarious, and she's awesome, and he's just not into her, even though they are, in normal terms, equally as attractive, but he's a leading man, and so she's not good enough for him, and she just rips him a new one, and it's awesome. So, go check it out, it's fabulous.
Okay, I think I saw your...
May I ask kind of a hot-button question?
Why do
we do?
Sure. It's, I mean, diversity is a fact. And how do you feel about the diversity representation at science fiction, fantasy sort of gatherings or in the fandoms? Because I don't see a lot of people of color. I don't see a lot of people... who are disabled. I mean, certainly I've gone to several panels now that focus on people of different genders or a few different things, but I haven't seen anything for people with mental illness. I mean, I'm kind of crazy or bad.
That's coming up. There's actually
a disability panel tomorrow morning.
There was an Asperger's panel. Yeah.
And there's another gender one on Saturday.
My apologies.
No, it's a good question. Yeah. Because I think even at this panel, you have a panel called Green is Not Diversity, and I'm just going to eyeball it here and say I'm the only person of color on the panel.
Exactly.
It's true.
But, you know, looking at the audience, we've got a lot of diversity in the audience.
Yes.
Yeah. And so, you know, that I think that too is, you know, pitching panels. I work for Geek Girl Con. I will disclose that. And again, pitching the panels, sometimes it's, you know, oh, there's not a diversity of panels. Did you pitch one? Because it's open to the public. And there are actually, in fandom, that's what I love about sci-fi and horror, is people came to this panel. You guys all came to a panel on Green is Not Diversity because you love the genre enough to want it to have it look like the world you know. And there's lots of white people in the room. So this isn't a... You know, and there's all mixtures of, you know, LGBT, and, I mean, there's all this representation. But also to see what's the speaker look like. And that is something that the actual organizers have to do and say, what do the panels look like?
It's not just the organizers, though. As panelists, we also have a responsibility to make sure the panels we're participating in are diverse.
Yes, you know? Right.
So, like, as a guy, it's essential to me to not be on panels that are all just men. I won't do it. And lots and lots of guys who care about these issues have made that same commitment. I also checked to make sure that there was a person of color on this panel before I agreed to it. they put my name, like I, you know, signed up for it, they put my name on it, and I was like, let's make sure I can see who these people are. So I checked. because, that's really, really important. I'd like to see even more diversity up here, but that's something that we as panelists can do, is to, like, make sure we're not participating on panels that, you know, don't show the diversity.
And they're invisible. I think, too, the important thing is they're almost, you know, race, especially, you know, maybe also with this presidency, has really, really come back up. But they're almost invisible diversities. Mm-hmm. Like, physical ability, I think, is one that often gets overlooked.
And class, and education,
and just,
gender,
I mean,
generally.
There's just lots of them that we just don't see. Yeah. And so are we including them? Are we getting the voice? Because it's not just how the panel looks, it's the diversity of opinion. It's the diversity of experience.
I'm diverse, ask me how.
Yeah.
No, the question you asked is actually a really good one. And especially since if you ever feel as though you're not seeing the diversity, like that you're not finding people that are like you or whatever, you should be talking about it. It could be that you're wrong and you're just like missing out on a community and you just didn't know it was there.
Volunteer.
That's a possibility. But if you if you aren't finding it, then obviously there's a reason why you're not finding it. You need to be put in touch. I will say, though, that you guys have noted that there are obviously some panels here that are on some of the issues related to this one. That's something that's really changing in fandom right now. I want to say it's all the internet, but I don't know if that's actually true. There may be, like, secret people hiding in a room somewhere doing this. Maybe. But this is a huge change right now. We're seeing more panels. We're seeing more conversations about representations on panels, particularly like ones like this that are on diversity issues. Like as you noted, that you actually checked. You wanted to make sure. And that's something that more people are doing. And we're seeing more conversations and more people actually speaking up, particularly LGBT people are talking about this stuff. And so there are communities. There is a group called Outer Alliance, which... they're not as active as they used to be, a little bit more, I guess you would say, an activist-y-ish group, not super activist-y, but now they're mostly sort of like a little community for writers and people who just are share the similar interests and want to share the work. There's things like that that are happening, and more of that stuff is appearing on panels, and more fans are talking about it. But again, if anyone feels like they're not like finding the diversity they're looking for, you should be talking about it. Yeah.
Blast it on social media. I mean, sometimes that's, you know, just say, hey, you know, I went to a panel. Everyone's seen, you know, a tweet where they show, oh, this was a women in something panel, and every single person on the panel was an old white man.
Yeah.
And sometimes the, you know, what some people would call public shaming, and I just call, I posted a photo of something you did. Like, that's not public shaming, that's called advertising.
If you feel it's shameful, that might tell you something.
Yeah. You know, it's to say, hey, you know, I noticed this, and I'm just wondering, like, what's the, you know, why does it look like this, or what was the limitation there? Did I know these five people that would have been great on this panel for next year. And I think, you know, the fan, you cannot, I mean, one example of the power of the fan is Fast and Furious.
Yeah.
They just wrapped film 7, which is actually a very diverse cast, actually. And the only reason The Rock is in it is because someone suggested it on Facebook. Someone said, I'd really like to see Vin Diesel and The Rock, like, fighting.
Nice.
And the, you know, producer and director were like, holy shit, that's brilliant. And boom, now you're on their film movie 3? I mean, 7. We can't get one Wonder Woman movie, and we've got 7 Fast and the Furious. So the power of the fan base does, you can change things.
And as a community, I mean, if you are feel like you're not the norm, whatever, I mean, if, you know, the white, straight, male, cisgender, Christian, whatever, if you don't fit perfectly in that, or even if you do and you think that diversity is important because media is imaginative and representative, it reflects who we are, or at least it should reflect who we are and how we want to be and how we want to see the world. And a lot of people just want to see the world the way that it is. And even though it's not our job to educate other people about why this is a thing, we need to be able to put it forth ourselves and live it, and then other people will learn on their own. It's not, you know, we don't have to walk around on corners throwing flyers out in the air. That's not
a
job.
It's an option.
If you want to, go for it. But, you know, that's not your responsibility. It's your responsibility to be a conscientious member of this community and a fan. And it's something that I think a lot of people struggle with, and I think you should struggle with it.
Make a bold change. I mean, look when they made the new Battlestar Galactica. Those people took a real chance on making a major casting decision that people were pissed about before they even saw the show.
And she was awesome.
And she was amazing, and people love her now.
Yep.
And that's, you know, it's courage. It's taking a step out and saying, you know, we're going to do it anyway.
They had a Trumpy officer on that show, too.
Or it's even like casting somebody that's not conventionally attractive. Like the BBC got so flippin' pissed when Benedict Cumberbatch got cast as Sherlock.
What?
And guess what? He is a sex symbol, and he's awesome. So
because he was not attractive enough.
Because he's not hot.
What?
Right?
Wrong.
Right? Yeah. Thank you.
That's so wrong.
he's definitely he's
yeah. He's a tasty man.
Oh yeah, it's the brain though. I think that does it. Yeah.
It's, yeah. But, well, any voice.
Well, yeah. We agree. Well, I agree. I shouldn't say the royal we.
We agree.
Oh, I think we all agree.
We agree. Okay.
There's also the really great example of taking characters that originally were white characters and reimagine them for the present. Comic books are like a really great example.
Yes.
I was going to actually go with the Michael B. Jordan example, who's going to be playing Human Torch now, which, by the way, greatest casting decision ever. I'm really excited about this.
Yes.
And you get this backlash, like, oh my gosh, he was white in the original comics. And they're like, yeah, that's great, but Marvel has had all these different universes, and the cinematic universe is not the same universe as the comics. It's not Earth 616. It's like Earth 8 Elemental PQ, right? So it doesn't actually matter that the Human Torch is a black guy. I mean, he could be a chimpanzee or a gerbil, a talking raccoon, right? It doesn't matter. They can cast him in any way they want because they can rewrite the history.
Right,
right. Now, I'm glad that they didn't make him.
German.
I mean, he could be German. He could be like the random guy with a German accent. I don't know.
But there are some directors that are really. I would put Kenneth Branagh actually in that category of, I'm going to cast who I think is good in the role. I mean, he cast Denzel Washington as the Prince in Much Ado About Nothing, his version.
Yep.
Josh Wheaton, however, makes a modern version set in Los Angeles. And it is whiter than the cast of Friends. But he also cast Idris Elba as Heimdall.
Yeah.
Because he wanted to, because he's Idris Elba and I can do what I want.
Yeah.
And so there are certain directors too that, you know, if you asked him, he would be like, because he's Idris Elba and he's awesome. Like, he wouldn't be like, I was trying to strike a blow for whatever. He's like, he's Kenneth Branagh. I want to put the best, Denzel Washington is the best prince. I'm going to put Idris Elba in my movie. So there are, those decisions are being made, and part of it is, do you support that with dollars?
Right.
And people clearly do, because how many of these freaking Marvel event? How many are we seeing? Like,
there are like four this year, I think.
They're planned out to like 2018, I think.
I'm going to die, and they're going to still be making
this movie. And they're doing so many amazing things. Like, Marvel is rewriting all of these characters. I mean, they say they're not going to do the Miles Morales Spider-Man.
Man.
But come on, that's going to happen eventually.
Why not?
Yeah. Well, they were talking about doing it immediately after Andrew Garfield might leave, because he's not going to be Spider-Man forever, right? And they're like, well, no, we won't do Miles Morales. We'll just keep doing regular Spider-Man. And, like, Andrew Garfield was like, no, we should totally do Miles Morales. That would be cool. It's in their brains now. It's not going to go away. Eventually, we will probably have something like this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the same thing with Michael B. Jordan playing Human Torch. I mean, there was so much backlash. People had hissy fits over this casting choice of, like, how could you possibly have a black guy? How is Sue Storm going to be, like, how is this going to work? They're going to have this whole backstory. And it's like, no, they could just put a picture and solve the problem. They don't have to have a conversation about this. You're obsessed with it for some reason. And they're just going to do it anyway.
Donald Glover was petitioning to be Spider-Man for Andrew Garfield, but he still wants it so bad.
Oh, my God, he would be fantastic.
He would be great.
Oh.
He would be great. Well, I remember when they floated Gina Torres as being Wonder Woman.
Oh, totally.
And, of course, you know, people were like, what? And then there were people like,
she's an Amazon. Who cares?
Yeah. And they were like, well, you know, maybe she's... Then there's the ageism thing. We haven't even brought up the ageism thing. Because people are like, she's too old. And I'm like, it's Wonder Woman? Like, what? Linda Carter was, I want to say she was in her 30s when she was filming Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
But really, does it matter with that much Botox? How old?
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't matter what superpower is. Like, she's still going to be super when she's 90.
Right. She's Zoe. She should be Wonder Woman.
Yeah. No. All right. I know you've had your hand up for a while.
I was thinking of a trope that's very common in, at least Disney movies, but I saw in Avatar, too, taking a person of color and putting them as an alien or as a Prince of Zafar and having the black characters as animals the entire time. Brother Bear, the Native American characters, animals the entire time, taking our characters of color and putting them into a different body. Like, I cannot remember that.
Tuvok is one example.
Yeah.
You make a person of color, or I would say Worf.
Yeah.
I mean, because we know he's a black actor. You make them an alien, and it's almost like, oh, okay, so we don't have all the baggage, maybe. Sometimes I think it's like if we cast this person as an alien or non-human Blade,
yeah.
It's not human, actually. I mean, if you, you know, kind of He's not technically human.
Right. He's like, yeah, half human.
So
yeah, kind of,
if you make him not human, then you don't have to deal sometimes with the baggage, quote unquote, that comes with race issues in humans if you make them an alien. You can still cast these people. You can still say, oh, look, we've got this diversity, but we never have to talk about it or deal with it because they're aliens.
And it's also categorizing them as an alien because their skin is different.
Right, it's other. Yeah.
Or we slap ears on them.
Right, right.
Tuvok is like, oh, well, he's a Vulcan, so that's like the overriding. And no, you know, like dealing with the fact that, okay, so it wasn't Spock a Vulcan, and you're saying that within Vulcans have got the race thing completely sorted out, which is awesome. So, I mean, there's that whole thing is you're almost, you're a double other. I mean, the audience is looking at this going, okay, you have what we would say is an actor that you know, or an actress that you know is a person of color, and we've made them non-human, but that's never even dealt with in any way. It just seems like that race is all of a sudden in skin color, and then the other thing too, I've seen that with LGBT characters is, oh well, if we make him an alien, then that totally explains XYZ.
Right. Yeah, even having the reasoning be that, like, so the Deep Space Nine lesbian story is entirely about the Trill character having previously been male. Like, it was a straight relationship before, and that's what makes it okay. It was actually a really revolutionary episode, and I like it a lot, but, you know, looking back on it now, quite a while after that episode was made, it's really problematic to be like, well, the reason the lesbian kiss is okay is because she used to be a guy.
Before, it's reincarnated. Like, that is, what's your point then in making it this otherness?
Well, it is progress, even if it is incremental.
Okay.
And incremental progress is better than nothing. But we should keep pushing the edges, I think. Keep pushing, keep making people just uncomfortable enough that they see it and they recognize that they're uncomfortable, and hopefully force themselves to become comfortable. Get rid of that issue that they have in their head that they didn't know they had.
Because people respond to that. I mean, when you've had people complain about Idris Elba being cast as Heimdall and Michael B. Jordan, then you have the groundswell of people going, shh, shut up. You know, like you have the opposite happen of, you're talking about an imaginary alien world where you have Norse gods. Okay, sit down. Like, that comes up too. So I think part of the beauty of having an age of social media is that you can have this vocal voice of people who think that I'm a minority and that I'm not being addressed. But on social media and in Facebook and on Twitter and on Pinterest and in the comments, that groundswell of support for these decisions gets like, you know, you get BuzzFeed, right? You become like this thing, and people go, oh, shut up then. We won't, you know, but you become the voice. And so that, I think, is make the voices heard. It's not, you know, people say, oh, you know, online activism, whatever. But when it comes to these types of decisions, if they know the fans are behind them, then they'll keep it. And they'll do it, because you're going to be the one spending $15, whatever it is, in your neighborhood to go see a movie at 12 o'clock at night on a Thursday. So they'll do it.
Yeah. The example of Star Trek is actually really, we brought it up a couple times now, talking about various aspects of Star Trek. Star Trek is interesting, I think, because Roddenberry set up this future world in which Earth has somehow magically figured out its stuff. Right. It's got no more of those issues anymore. It's got no more wars. It's got no racial strife. Its nations have all, like, gotten together and, like, had a picnic. It's all wonderful. And I think he did that deliberately because he was trying to set up a future where he could bring in aliens to deal with the racial questions given the time in which it was made, but in a space that seemed safe. So it wasn't like, oh, I'm talking about the civil rights movement. No, no, I'm talking about the Klupokes who live on Planet Monkey. Or whatever, right? I'm talking about them, and they're having strife, and they're not friends with the humans, but we're going to figure it out, right? And in a way to kind of address those issues. That doesn't quite, I think the problem with Star Trek is that it becomes a model that gets repeated, where it's just throw an alien in there, or like throw a Cylon, and like that. There's your allegory, and we'll just keep using this as a repeated allegory over and over, instead of just saying, well, how about you just set something 100 years in the future, and you don't be too overly optimistic and think like we just magically figured everything out, and you actually deal with these issues in a futuristic society, that would be equally as valuable than just kind of repeating the Star Trek model. Not to say the Star Trek's not awesome, it is, but it's just not a thing we need to necessarily repeat in every instance.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I mean, if we look back at Star Trek and also science fiction before that, Rod Serling's Twilight Zone, their intention was to be able to approach these volatile issues and be able to speak about them in a way where they don't need to be quiet. They don't need to try and please the hierarchy of money and companies and corporations, so they can talk about race, so they can talk about sexism, so they can talk about classism and things like that. Next Generation had an episode with a race of eight gender people, and there was a character in it who identified as a gender, and after, well, I don't want to spoil the episode, but it was a very kind of heart-wrenching episode, at least for me it was. I mean, certainly I do think that it is important to be able to speak to people on a level that isn't in the future utopia, how will we deal with it. I also think, though, that it's inspiring to sit back and be able to watch a science fiction series where we did figure stuff out. Lately, we've been inundated with a lot of Battlestar Galactica, Game of Thrones, a lot of fiction that's wonderful, but also really grim and dark. And I don't know. I like thinking that maybe someday we will figure it out.
I think that's what people love. I mean, I grew up in a household where we watched classic Star Trek. And for the time, you know, and we also watched Quincy, right? So for the time, you had a major character that was Asian. You had police detectives that were African-American. And I grew up in L.A. And then we watched Star Trek, and you had characters that you're like, wow, these are on television. They're major. And sure, you know, the comm lady was like, we have a message coming in. there's limitations there. But there were, you know, you did see something that looked something like you. It wasn't perfect, but it was certainly, for when I was growing up in the early 80s, was beyond what I'd seen before. And so, I mean, there is that, you kind of do want to see that, where you're just like, you know what, maybe a utopia is not half bad, but then does your utopia, is it actually have people of color? Does your utopia actually have, is it the utopia of perfection? Whatever you define that as. Or is it that everyone just doesn't kill each other? Like, what's your definition? I think that's more telling. It's not that it's utopia, but it is a utopia where you've got aliens and humans. You've got people of color. You've got a good mix. I think Torchwood has done that a bit when they've kind of done a little bit of time travel. You see, you're like, oh, this is a hodgepodge of... You're not seeing too much of this beautiful... I mean, everyone's beautiful, as we would define it. And I say we because... Again, we buy into that, what we think is beautiful in Hollywood. What does your utopia look like? And I think the utopia that I would like to see was, well, you're just not, you know, the violence, that we're at peace or whatever, but physically, what does utopia look like? I think that's the problem, is when we try to put that physically utopia means that everyone's going to have straight hair and everyone's going to be, you know, 5'10" and 130 pounds. And the men have six packs, and the women are toned, but not too toned. You don't want to look.
They're not Vasquez,
right? You don't want to look manly. You know, I mean, all of that. So I think there's, you know, how are you defining utopia? I think is also because there are those sci-fi movies that or genres that you see utopia, but it just means that, you know, we figured out that let's just not kill everyone. So
I think what's very hopeful is looking at the old Star Trek, for example. You see people dealing with the issues of race in a very veiled manner, but a very, you know, because they want to be able to talk about it in this free space. And then, for example, when you get to the 90s and early 2000s with Buffy the Vampire Slayer, they were dealing with, you know, homosexuality, but they were only dealing with that because they couldn't deal with that and race, that and something else, because only handle one thing at a time. But they were still dealing with it, and they dealt with it in an explicit manner. And of course, Joss Whedon was, you know, playing with all of us when, you know, Tara and Willow were doing magic. They weren't actually doing magic. But it started out as this thing the way Star Trek did it, and then he just, you know, said, screw it and have the first lesbian kiss on network television. And so now I would say that hopefully we're getting to the place where intersectionality is what we see in our diversity. So it's not just, oh, this is a show with, you know, people of various ethnicities, but oh, this is a show of people of various ethnicities and gender and religion and everything else you could imagine. But I'm having a hard time pinning down like a really good example of that.
I think it's hard. I think that you are right. They get into this, like, we're going to deal with one issue at a time. And we can't do two things at once. And maybe an example, like Shonda Rhimes, again, not in the genre. But, and I don't think she ever, you know, with the Sarah Ramirez character.
She had a Latino lesbian.
Right. You know, I mean, but, you know, again, it's kind of like, what's going on? And then, you know, interracial romance on Scandal. Of course, it's the President of the United States, but what can you do? but, you know, it's out of genre. But then you think, okay, well, maybe the lesson is, if you look out of genre, you have shows that are handling things really well. You know, you can do a show where you have a diverse cast of all kinds, and it's not a black show, or it's not a gay show, or it's not... And I think one of those, I never remember the name of the show, I never remember the name right, but Andre Brower, who is a great actor, and he's been in Homicide, I love that show, and now he's a black captain, I want to say captain, he might be a lieutenant, but he's gay, and it's not a thing, he's doing his job, like he's NYPD captain, like you shut up and go do what I told you to do, like, but that's just part of his character. He's on a comedy show too, like it's this...
It's called Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Also notable because there are two black male characters.
Yeah, right. And usually, again, there can only be one. It's like Highlander.
Nice. Yes.
So I wanted to just like let you know, shout out Brooklyn Nine-Nine. But
thank
that
you.
Show is also notable for having many women and also women of color. And
yes.
Actually, two Latino cops.
And that genre, that kind of, not only comedy, but the cop genre, I think, has really, if you look at The Wire, if you look at Law and Order, if you look at Homicide, that genre, Orange is the New Black, the genre of kind of law enforcement in some angle, whether it's an attorney show, whether it's a cop show, they've gotten that down where they're able to deal with a diverse cast in a way that's just real life. These are just real people, and everyone could be an asshole, and everyone could be a hero, and... you know, so I think the writers are there. The talent is there to do that. If you can do it with The Wire, if you can do it with Treme, if you can do it with those, then you can do it across the board. There isn't, you know.
All right, we've got about 4 minutes left. I'm going to take your question, and then we should wrap up.
Just a quick point of what you said, when we were talking about utopia earlier, people saying, this is my utopia, you know, people looking forward into what will society be like after we've solved all these things. I think what's good about the cop shows, maybe, is that they're not, like, sci-fi likes to focus on the future so much, and they can get involved in, what's the ideal? Well, the ideal is all thin, white, cis people, except for some aliens who are different because of aliens. Mm-hmm. You know, I think bringing... now into sci-fi fantasy, maybe it's happening with Torchwood. That's sci-fi fantasy, but it's set in the now mostly. You know,
true.
Maybe just bringing now or bringing what's like now in reality and present into sci-fi, not making utopia. Maybe just making or not making it the utopia.
Not so not escaping to the future, basically what you're saying.
And also, isn't how we fix that problem a really interesting question?
Yeah.
Why can't we write that?
Yeah.
It's not easy.
But
right.
Again, if you have a show like The Wire, if you have, you know, you've these great things on television where, you know, you have something like Longmire where you can do these difficult things and it can be done. And if you can do it set in some rural town in Montana, you can do it set on Mars. I don't buy that it can't be done.
I almost thought I had the answer. Like, where's the show that actually did it? And I thought, Alien Nation. I was like, damn it, it's got aliens.
Not really.
Yeah. It takes place in the contemporary moment, and they do actually directly address the fact that, like, Sykes actually has that moment when he's goes to the school, all these people are protesting, like, aliens, go away! And he's like, so you just want to, like, do, like, what we did to all these other people? And, like, yeah, and he, like, brings all of this stuff up. And it's actually, I think, brilliant, because that very first episode deals with that explicitly and says, this is baloney, guys. And he puts them all in their place. But that doesn't end it. Of course, there's, like, this just massive xenophobia throughout the show. It's
and,
really
of course,
good. You've never seen it.
It had to be a white dude to say that.
I know,
it
does. Right.
Yes.
I just, like, had a quick comment about Brooklyn Nine-Nine. The diversity is one thing, but another thing that's great about it is that the diversity isn't, like, the point of the show.
Exactly.
Like, it's just so nice that there's diversity without that being the entire show, is that it's so diverse, and I just love it.
It's Brooklyn. I mean, you would be weird. It would be like watching Friends for me. It was like, really? I mean, it's Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I mean, isn't that what it should look like?
Right.
So it makes perfect sense.
Sometimes existence is enough.
Yeah.
People exist. Shocker, right?
Of all shapes and sizes,
we don't have to shine a spotlight on it.
Right, well, not always. You don't have to do that. Right. You can. I mean,
yeah.
But
at some point, you'll have to bring. I mean, like any of these shows, like Brooklyn Nine, you'll bring that up. It'll at some point, because that's human life. Right? Someone's gonna call someone a slur, and someone's gonna that's going to come up because that reflects how life really is. But maybe not. Every minute of every workday.
Right. Okay, we are running out of time. Let us wrap up. Any closing comments?
Oh, goodness. No.
No? You're done? You had enough?
Yeah.
Okay.
I say keep the conversation going. I'm going to be doing a panel at GeekGirlCon called Double Other. So we'll be talking about alien/people of color. So definitely on Twitter, keep the conversation going because we'll all track that and see, you know, comments and all that kind of thing. And of course, you know, your guys are the fans and the fans nowadays are supremely powerful. So if this is what you want to see, let them know.
Thank you all for coming. Damn it, I want a Wonder Woman movie.
Yeah.
That would be so cool.
And I'm just going to say, I think all of us need to try harder to not be fans and be more of a community. Because in community, we can ask for things. As a fan, you're just consuming things.
Good point.
Can I
shamelessly plug?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, so my podcast, The Skipping Fantasy Show, this year, our focus is on World SF. And we're trying as much as possible. We got 52 weeks out of the year, so like we can't go everywhere in the world. There are like 200 something countries. There is so much, and that's the really sad thing. Is I don't live in my house and podcast all day long because I have to eat. But throughout the year, we're actually doing that. We've done things like Australia and science fiction. We had Brazil, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So throughout the year, that's what we're doing. So if that's something that's of interest to you, I mean, you could check it out. And that's skippingfandy.com. So.
Great.
Sweet. Oh, I'm sorry. Throughout 2014, we're doing a thing. Oh, sorry. The Skippy and Fanty Show. I'm like wearing it. Yeah, I feel like really now I'm shameless.
Grab them right after the panel team.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It's just.
All right.
Is everyone on Twitter? Sorry, is everyone on Twitter?
Yeah.
Maybe Twitter handles, if you guys are interested in following us, if you want to continue the conversation. Sometimes if you just did the CVG 2014, we might not find you because there's so many things. But if you're interested in continuing these conversations, we're going to, you know, there'll be a lag time between I am here and I run out the door. No. but maybe just ask for our Twitter handles because I definitely would want to hear from everybody and keep in touch.
Sure. Fabulous.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you all for coming.
Thank you, guys.
If you would like to send us hate mail on this episode or any other topics we've covered, you can do so in a number of ways. You can send us an email.
SkiffyandFanty@gmail.com.
You can send us a tweet.
@SkiffyandFanty.
Leave a comment on the blog.
SkiffyandFanty.com.
Go to Google+.
Shawnee Jen.
And or Facebook.
The Skiffy and Fanty Show. Our intro music comes from Time Flux by Revolution Void. You can check them out at freemusicarchive.org.
Another weak human afraid to face death.
I fart in your general direction.
France
certain planet.
The Force will be with you. Always.
End of line.